Welcome back to Tamart Radio on KDRT 95.7 FM in Davis, California. This is your host, Rohan Bakshi. If you ever pass by UC Davis's Toomey Field on spring weekends, you'll see a team of athletes engrossed in practicing their sprints, jumps, and throws. They're the track and field members of Team Davis, the Special Olympics team for Davis and other Yolo County residents. Special Olympics all began in the 1950s and 1960s when Eunice Kennedy Shriver saw how unfairly people with intellectual disabilities were treated. Many children with intellectual disabilities lived in institutions and didn't even have a place to play. She decided to take action and in 1962 held a summer day camp for young people with intellectual disabilities in her own backyard in Maryland. This was also the year that Ms. Shriver shared with the public that her sister, Rosemary, who was President Kennedy's sister as well, had an intellectual disability. This was the start of Camp Shriver. The goal was to focus on what children could do and not on what they could not do. Mrs. Shriver asked schools and clinics in her area for names of children with special needs who might be interested. She recruited high school and college students as counselors. The camp was a big success. The children played soccer and basketball, swam, and rode horses. The counselors saw that their stereotypes were wrong and that the children wanted to have fun, just like any other child. The camp grew and people from the community, parks department, and public school system came out to watch. This really started changing people's perceptions and attitudes around child development and inclusion. In 1967, the Chicago Park District proposed a citywide track meet for people with intellectual disabilities to Mrs. Shriver and the Kennedy Foundation. The meet was modeled after the Olympics, and its scope was expanded to include athletes from around the country. On July 20, 1968, the first International Special Olympics Summer Games were held. 1,000 athletes from the US and Canada marched into Soldier Field in Chicago with their state flags and banners. The athletes competed in over 200 events, including swimming, hockey, and track and field. Between events, athletes participated in skills clinics taught by professional athletes. At the event's press conference, Ms. Shriver told reporters, quote, "Today's Special Olympics Games have not been organized as a spectacle. They are not being conducted just for fun. The Special Olympics prove a very fundamental fact, the fact that exceptional children can be exceptional athletes, that through sports they can secure a pledge that all children will have this chance in the future," end quote. Over the next few years, many more Special Olympics events were held around the world. Today, more than 5 million athletes compete in more than 100,000 events each year in 172 nations. And that was how the Special Olympics grew from a backyard summer camp to a global movement that has enhanced people's lives and changed attitudes about ability and inclusion. The first Special Olympics International Summer Games were held on July 20th of 1968 at Soldier Field in Chicago, Illinois, which is why our place of the week is the Windy City, Chicago. Up next is Dark Skies by Arizona.
Hold on and stay low. Everything will be alright. If the wind is gonna blow cold, then I'll keep you in my arms tonight. I can't control when the world falls apart or when tears fall so hard from your eyes. Even when we're in the darkest of days, I'm never leaving your side. I feel it coming up ahead. Dark skies and trouble up ahead, my love.
Hey! I can't control all the waves and the tides when there's nothing but clouds in the sky. Even when we're in the darkest of days, I'm never leaving your side.
Welcome back to Tamot Radio on KDRT 95.7 FM in Davis, California. This is your host, Rohan Bakshi. Our guest on today's episode is Robin Dewey, a longtime Davis resident who is a dedicated advocate for people living with disabilities. She's the president and founder of Team Davis, a nonprofit organization that helps enrich the lives of children and adults with developmental, cognitive, and physical disabilities. So, Robin, welcome back to the show. The last time I had you was a long time ago, back in November of 2020. So certainly things with Team Davis have changed. So first off, you were involved in Special Olympics for many years with your son, Matt. And then in 2006, after years of being involved in Special Olympics, you started Team Davis. So what led you to establish Team Davis?
Well, first of all, thank you, Rohan. We really appreciate the opportunity to talk more about our organization, Team Davis. I would say what really prompted us to start the nonprofit Team Davis was we wanted to do more than sports. Up until then, we were only involved in Special Olympics, but we had a number of other activities that we wanted to be able to provide to our participants.
And the motto of Team Davis is seeing the ability in disability. So as you mentioned, Team Davis offers a lot of sports. Can you go into a little bit more depth about what sports and other activities as well does Team Davis offer to its athletes?
Sure, I'd be happy to. In terms of sports, we have several that we do. We do basketball, bocce. We do bowling in collaboration with the city. We have flag football. We do golf. We do long distance running, soccer, softball, swimming, tennis, track and field. So those are our sports, and they basically are kind of 2-month seasons. And so in spring, we have 4 different sports, and then 2 or 3 in the summer, and then several in the fall. Again, so typically 2-month seasons followed by a tournament. And for that particular sport. And then in the summer, we have what we call summer games with several sports. So those are our sports. In terms of our other activities, one thing we have that you are very familiar with is we have sort of a hiking club mm-hmm. that you are the lead volunteer on. So thank you very much for those. People get to hike around town and see new places. And Rohan, you're very helpful in sort of explaining things and teaching people about the environment, et cetera. So that's really great.
Thank you.
The other thing we have are art classes, and those are weekly as well, and as singing. Singing is a weekly session as well. So we have art and singing. We also have what we call good foods class, which is a nutrition class that we hold a few times a year, sort of. They'll be weekly for 3 or 4 weeks, and then there'll be a break, and then another 3 or 4 weeks, they'll start up again. We also have a garden on campus that is very, you know, full, and people can go and pick vegetables on Saturday mornings, et cetera. And so it's a very large garden, and it's right near the domes on campus. We also have quarterly dances. We also have parent education forums so that we can get parents, people with disabilities together to learn about resources, ask each other questions, sort of talk about various concerns and things that people can do to support their sons and daughters. And then we're also considering some new activities, like somebody has proposed having a card game night. That hasn't gotten started yet, but we're looking into that. So that gives you sort of an idea of the things that we're doing.
Yeah, and the COVID-19 pandemic changed things drastically for Team Davis. How was Team Davis able to adapt to the pandemic?
That's a good question. It was obviously a real challenge for everybody, since all of our activities were in person. But I will say there were two things that occurred during the pandemic that were pretty amazing. One was Special Olympics provided sports online. And what that meant was that they would have some coaches demonstrating activities that people could watch on Zoom and then do in their own homes. And so I thought that was really creative, given that sports is really needs to be in person. But they managed to offer exercise and other things online. The other thing that we were able to do during the pandemic was our singing teachers provided a singing class each week online, so everybody could continue that activity. Everything else got put on hold pretty much, but I was pretty amazed that our singing teachers were able to keep going through the entire time that every week for those 2 years. So,
yeah, and Team Davis has approximately 150 active participants and 50 active volunteers. Why are programs like Team Davis important for a city to have?
Well, I think it's important to be able to reach the whole community, and the city government can't always do that. So we are dependent on volunteers taking an interest in supporting the needs in our community. In our city, however, just so you know, we are lucky enough to have a program that is run by the city for people with disabilities, and it's called Adaptive Recreation. And they provide a lot of activities as well. One of the things they do that we don't do that's really great is they take trips outside of town and go to museums or, you know, various other sort of things. And so just really want to say that we're really grateful to our partners like Adaptive Rec, but we also have other partners as well. And again, so this is sort of more on the volunteer front. In addition to Adaptive Rec, we have the UC Davis Nutrition Program. They're the ones that design and run our good foods classes, our nutrition classes. We partner with Purple Tree Cafe that makes treats, you know, and sells them at the farmer's market, et cetera. The owner of Purple Tree Cafe is our singing teacher. And so we often do things together, like what we call hootenannies, where once a month, everybody, the singer, Team Davis singers will gather downtown and sing to the community. And we also, our dances are offered to us by the Rebecca Lodge, which is part of the Oddfellows Lodge, and they've started sponsoring those dances for us. And then we have True Connections, which is a day program in town that lets us use their facility for our classes, et cetera. So just want to call out, you know, we couldn't do what we do in our city without the people who are helping us. So we're very dependent on our partners and our volunteers.
You have a background in health education and worked at UC Berkeley School of Public Health for 25 years, where you conducted health and safety training for workplaces and employers. How do you use this experience in your work with Team Davis?
Good question. Well, I think some of the skills that I gained in public health include things like assessing individuals' needs, providing training to the audience that matches their needs, and I guess, you know, being able to organize events. But I also learned a lot from Team Davis participants I've been able to use for work. So I developed and teach a health and safety course specifically to employers of workers with intellectual and developmental disabilities that includes modeling activities that they can use to teach their workers that, you know, may not be able to read, for example, et cetera. And so those activities are from a curriculum that I developed that's available online at one of our federal agencies' websites, downloadable for free. But anyway, so I, you know, it's gone both ways.
Yeah, for sure. And you've been involved with Team Davis now for over a decade and a half. What do you find most rewarding so far about being part of the team?
Well, I love our participants and their families. And so I think just being together and, you know, I also appreciate getting to know the leaders in the organizations that partner with us. So I think it's, you know, it's personal. I've seen how much my son has gotten out of Team Davis. And I think that's meaningful to me as well. So, you know, it's the people.
Mm-hmm. If you could describe Team Davis in one word or phrase, what would that be and why?
I would say one word would be inclusive, and that, you know, we really want everybody who thinks they might benefit from being a part of Team Davis to join us, whether that means a participant or a family or a volunteer, that, you know, basically anybody who feels that Team Davis is for them, we want them to join. I will say that we do have expenses. And so we do fundraise. We have one paid employee, as well as, you know, the cost of insurance and equipment and our storage shed, et cetera. And I'll just mention, because it's coming up, that we're going to be doing some fundraising through Big Day of Giving. So we appreciate any donations that people are able to give.
Yeah. And beyond Team Davis, you volunteer in the Davis community in many other ways. You hold a backyard summer concert series to benefit local musicians and help people with disabilities integrate into community life. So what advice would you give to teens who want to volunteer in their communities?
I think it's important to think about your interests and your skills, sort of, you know, identify what those are. And they can range from different sports or liking music or just knowing that you like to help people. So just sort of thinking about who you are, what you have potentially to offer, and then maybe research who in our community is doing these things that you might want to reach out to, and then maybe sit in on one of their events to see if it seems like a good fit, and then approach whoever is in charge of that group about volunteering. And I will say, in terms of Team Davis, that we are in need of more volunteers. So if there's something that we're doing that is of interest to you, please reach out to us. And the other thing I want to mention too is that we have a website that has a lot of what we're doing on there, and it's team-davis.org if you want to go and see what's going on and think about whether you want to volunteer for us.
Yeah, definitely. So thank you so much, Robin, for joining me on Time Out Radio today. Great to talk to you.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you. Thank you, Ron.
Yeah, that's Robin Dewey, who is the president and founder of Team Davis. We'll be right back. And that was Awaken by Big Wild. In today's travel segment, we visit Chicago. With a population of 2.7 million people, it's the largest city in the state of Illinois and the third most populous city in the United States. Chicago is located on the shores of Lake Michigan. After the Great Chicago Fire of 1871, which destroyed several square miles and left more than 100,000 homeless, the city had a massive effort to rebuild. The construction boom increased the growth of the city's population through the next few decades, and by 1900, less than 30 years after the Great Fire, Chicago was the fifth largest city in the world. This could be where Chicago's nickname, Second City, comes from, because the city was actually built twice. The name could also be because Chicago was the second largest city after New York in the 1890 census. Chicago's O'Hare International Airport is the world's fourth busiest airport. Once land, be prepared to be awed by the city's architecture and skyscrapers. The Home Insurance Building, built in 1885, is considered the world's first skyscraper. It was 12 stories tall, an impressive height for a building at the time. The 110-story Willis Tower, originally known as the Sears Tower, was built in 1973 and was the world's tallest building for 2.5 decades. Chicago is not all architecture and skyscrapers. The city's motto, which translates to City in a Garden, was adopted in the 1830s and refers to its impressive park system. Tired of walking through Chicago? Take the city's L train system that started in 1892 and was the first elevated railway in the country. When you get hungry after taking in the sights, try the city's famous deep dish pizza. It's built in the following order: crust, cheese, toppings, and tomato sauce. Thin slices of pizza can only hold so many toppings before they collapse or get soggy. But a deep dish pizza has room for a larger quantity of toppings because the crust is sturdier. The pan where the deep dish pizza is baked gives it a tall edge and extra space for lots of cheese and a chunky tomato sauce. The Chicago-style hot dog, a beef hot dog on a poppy seed bun, is loaded with relish, mustard, peppers, onions, tomato, dill pickle, and celery salt, which makes for a very crowded hot dog. But don't even think of putting ketchup on your Chicago-style hot dog. That practice is frowned upon in the city. Famous Chicago resident Barack Obama once said that ketchup does not belong on a hot dog once you're past 8 years old. Chicago's professional sports teams are the Bulls of the NBA, the Bears of the NFL, the Cubs and White Sox of the MLB, the Blackhawks of the NHL, the Chicago Fire of the MLS, and the Sky of the WNBA. One of Chicago's nicknames is the Windy City. There are many theories about where the name came from. It could refer to a tornado that blew through the city in 1876, or from a reporter who in 1893 wrote that the city's politicians were full of hot air. Or most likely the name comes from the cold and fierce winds that blow into Chicago's streets from Lake Michigan. Despite this nickname, you may be surprised to know that Chicago is actually not the windiest city in the country. Boston, New York, and San Francisco clock higher average wind speeds. So that wraps up our journey to our place of the week, the city of Chicago. Alright, let's call a timeout for Timeout Radio. This was your host, Rohan Bakshi. You're listening to Cater 95.7 FM, where the grassroots grow. Have a great day, everyone.